Heroin is becoming more popular in Wisconsin, and not just in large cities like Milwaukee or Madison. It's hitting small cities here in western Wisconsin. One example, Hudson. We did a show last summer describing the issue, and at the time, there were 7 overdose deaths in and around the city, and that was over the last 2 years. It's an awful drug that destroys lives, destroys families, and threatens entire communities. But now, the state is weighing in, as legislators have introduced a handful of bills aimed at reducing heroin overdose deaths. So this hour, we'll revisit the growing problem of heroin in Hudson, and preview those bills, and ask our guests whether this will be enough to stem the tide of heroin in Wisconsin, whether this is just the start, and what more might need to be done. This is The West Side. I'm Rich Kramer, and joining me this hour is Karen Hale, a mother who lost her daughter to heroin overdose last year and now has devoted much time to raising awareness about this drug. Karen Hale, thanks for joining us again.
Thank you.
Good to have you back. Next, I'd like to welcome Jeff Willems. He's a detective sergeant with the Hudson Police Department who has worked in a number of heroin cases. Jeff Willems, thanks so much for being here as well.
Thank you.
And we've also joining us in studio. We're joined by Amber Hahn. She's an assistant district attorney for St. Croix County who prosecutes drug cases and also works with the county's drug court. Amber Hahn, thank you for speaking with us this morning as well.
Thank you for having me.
And joining us by phone from Hudson is Republican State Representative Dean Knutson, who is holding a listening session on the bills we just spoke about tonight in Hudson. Dean Knutson, thanks for taking the time.
Good morning, Rich. Thanks for doing this show.
Thank you for being with us, and good morning to you as well. And listeners, we want to hear from you. Have you dealt with a prescription painkiller addiction, or have you or anyone you know struggled with that type of addiction or with heroin? Give us a call and share us your story. The number is 1-800-228-5615. All we ask is a first name and your story. 800-228-5615. Also, if you have any questions or comments for our guests this hour, feel free to chime in. And if you'd rather not be on the air, you can log on to Facebook and check out the West Side Facebook page and leave a comment or a question there. So let's kind of review what we're talking about here. And I'll start with you, Jeff Willems. Last summer, we first learned about the heroin issue in Hudson on this show and in the St. Croix area. And at the time, we had reported that there had been about 7 heroin overdose deaths in and around the city in the last 2 years. Has heroin continued to be an issue in Hudson since then? And have there been any more emergencies?
Yes, heroin is still a problem in the Hudson area and St. Croix County in general. There have been a number of overdoses that have not resulted in deaths since the last time we spoke, but yeah, to answer your question, it's still a very big problem.
And that have not resulted in deaths, does that have to do with this drug Narcan? I mean, were those Narcan saves or not?
Some of them were. Some of them were early response to emergency rooms by private friends or family members.
Okay. And Amber Hahn, I'm interested in hearing how many cases actually get to your desk as far as heroin is concerned. Are there more than there had been, say, 2 years ago, or is it kind of on par, or do you not get a lot of cases?
Sure. That's kind of a complicated question. I think if I were to say that there were a lot of cases, it would be accurate. If I would say there were a lot of cases that were charged out in heroin, I would be inaccurate. Most of the cases that we see evidence of heroin use. We see paraphernalia associated with heroin use. We have officers that are interviewing persons who are talking about their heroin use and the use of the persons involved in the case. However, we very rarely find heroin when we go in a law enforcement type interdiction. We will often find broken balloons, packaging materials, things associated with the use, but very rarely see heroin. And that means that we don't have a lot of possession of heroin cases that get charged out. But it is definitely there. We see it in other non-traditional ways. Instead of a possession case, we may see it in an overdose death case or a situation of an overdose that does not result in death. But as far as cases that get charged out, there are very few.
Now, is that because people are so eager to use that they'll use it right away and the evidence is gone, or?
That's definitely part of it. Heroin, and I think probably Detective Willems can speak to this as well, the way that heroin gets used, it is often consumed very quickly after being picked up. It's not something that we typically find sitting around as some of the other drugs that we deal with. Mm-hmm. And so that's definitely part of it.
Detective Willems, would you like to chime in to that?
Yeah, that's a very accurate statement. Most of the time when we come into contact with it, if there is any, it's very little. Though heroin is relatively cheap in our area, people still don't have the resources to buy a large quantity of it to last them for a week or two. So they're picking up amounts that will keep them satisfied for a day or two. So just because of that, we're not going to find a large quantity of it.
So why is it so available and so cheap? I mean, I guess the big picture must have something to do with the Twin Cities Metro. Is that right?
That's where most of ours is coming from, in the Hudson and St. Croix area. Before the Twin Cities Metro area, it comes from Chicago, it comes from Mexico, California, Southern California.
Mm-hmm.
But the reasons why it's so cheap and so potent in our area, I don't know that I can answer that. I don't know why.
Hmm. And what is there anyone, I mean, this is a complicated issue overall, but why is it becoming more popular? And Karen Hale, I'll ask you that. Any idea, like with your daughter, how did she get into this? And how do, from, I imagine you've learned more stories or heard more stories since you've been becoming an advocate on this, but how does a person go from nothing to heroin? That's like going from 0 to 100.
Sure. I think a lot of it had to do with the prescription drugs changing the way it was produced. Mm-hmm. And the availability and the cheap cost associated. Prescription pills were a lot more expensive, and for an addict to try and find that amount of money was harder. Mm-hmm. And so the next alternative is heroin, which is cheaper, higher quality, coming from our city, and easily available.
Now, within these past seven months, you, I imagine, have been speaking with more and more people, and what have you noticed happening since we talked last on this program? Is it kind of leveled off, or are there more families struggling with this than before?
Oh, there's always going to be families struggling. I think I think my voice has helped open other people to talk freely about it. Mm-hmm. Because it is such a stigma, and there's an embarrassment as a family. This isn't happening in my home, because the majority of them are middle class, upper class families, and it wrecks the whole dynamics of a family unit. I think looking out, there's still tons of kids out here, and you know, adults too, that are struggling. The gateway a lot with them was the prescription drugs, moving towards the heroin. And it's that underground world that is being very secretive out there. That's still out there. There's still the same amount of people that are using. They're still struggling, either through treatment, coming out of treatment, relapsing. So it's a vicious circle that we're still continually going to fight.
We're talking about heroin in Hudson, and we've got a number of guests that are on the front lines of this issue. The number to call in is 1-800-228-5615 if you'd like to ask a question or give a comment and share a story if you like. Anonymity is available to those who request it. So give us a call, 800-228-5615. Now, as far as heroin use, is there any one age, Jeff Willems, that you've come into contact with more than others? Are we talking young kids? Can it be older folks? Can it be anybody?
It can be anybody. We've seen everyone from the age of 17, all the way to the age of 55 that we've had firsthand contact with that have been using heroin.
And would you agree that the prescription painkillers, otherwise known as opioids, are playing a leading role in this, or a major role?
Yes, I would agree with that. Based on the interviews that I've done with heroin users and people associated with that kind of lifestyle, generally the vast majority have started with prescription painkillers of some kind.
And what pushes them over that line to try heroin, because I remember thinking, if I even look at heroin, I'll become addicted and I'll live in an alley or something. I was terrified of it.
Right.
Is that stigma gone now?
I don't know that the stigma is gone, but people that are hurting the way they're hurting and suffering the way they are, I don't think care. They're just trying to find some relief. And Karen spoke to the fact that oftentimes these start with the prescription opiates, and at some point the prescription runs out. So they can't get it anymore. They have to get it on the black market. Well, that's going to cost you a dollar a milligram generally.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's going to cost you about $50 a pill, and that's going to be one use. Well, if you can get heroin for $10 or $20, for a tenth of a gram or two tenths of a gram, $40 might last you a couple of days.
Hmm. And Karen, is it ironic? Can we call it irony that this resurgence of what is arguably one of the worst, illegal drugs, can be directly tied to prescription drugs, something that is thought of as safe? It's something that may have been, there's a lot of claims that it's been overprescribed in the past.
Well, yeah, I agree. I mean, because we live in that fast food society, we want everything fast. We want our pain management to be cured fast, in essence. Mm-hmm. And, some of it's coming from the pad of an entrusted doctor. I mean, you go to the doctor, you entrust in this doctor. You would entrust that the pain management would also be monitored. Unfortunately, the prescriptions are brought home. They're used up to a point where someone thinks that their pain is taken care of, and they leave the remaining in their medicine cabinet. And then that opens the can of a child going into a parent or grandparent's medicine cabinet, taking the pills, using it themselves, knowing that they can make $40, $50, or sometimes $80 for one pill. Well, to a kid, that's some money. And then they kind of get sucked into this role. And so that's, I think, the vicious circle that we have here. We within our medicine cabinets are feeding this addiction. Our doctors are feeding this addiction. There's not just one thing or one area that's pointing to how this all got started.
And I understand that as far as the transition from prescription painkiller to heroin, it doesn't necessarily have to involve a needle right away. Is that correct, Karen?
Right. Like my daughter, she started snorting and smoking the pills, and then it came to the injection. But again, when the makeup of the drug changed and they could no longer melt that down, that was when the heroin use became.
But I mean, with the heroin, that can also be snorted.
Yes, that
and
can
smoked.
Also be snorted and smoked, and the IV use is probably the last resort.
Hmm. Dean Knutson, I'm curious to get your thoughts on this. Being a state legislator and also a former mayor of the city of Hudson, when this issue came up, did you feel blindsided by this?
No, we've been watching this happen, not just in the Hudson and St. Croix County area, but really it's a growing, some would say exploding problem around the entire state of Wisconsin. I mean, it doesn't surprise people that it's happening in Madison or Milwaukee. What does surprise is that there are so many heroin addicts in places like Marinette, Wisconsin, where Representative Nygren's daughter became addicted, and in Hudson. So it's a statewide problem. It's one, this business of the gateway transition from, stealing OxyContin from someone's medicine cabinet, and then ultimately that leading to a chain of events that leads you to be addicted to heroin. That's something we've known about. I mean, we actually, Detective Willems will remember, back when I was mayor, that in Hudson we started a prescription drug drop-off program to do collection and disposal of remainder prescriptions and things. I mean, that's a very effective program. There have been a lot of roadblocks in the way of communities doing that effectively, and so that's what one of our bills does.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And we'll get to the bills in just a second. But first, we've got a caller on the line, and I'm eager to get to them. We're going to hear from Amy in Ladysmith. Amy, you're on the line, on the air. Thanks for calling in.
Hi. 19 and a half years ago, I got clean and sober, and I started using heroin just like like you're talking about. I started with painkillers because I had degenerative disc disease, And a friend of mine introduced me to the heroin because I couldn't afford the pain medication anymore at that time, and I was younger. And here it is 19 and a half years later, and I'm losing friends' children to fentanyl patches. And I'm wondering if any of your guests can talk to that. A young gentleman from the Chippewa area this summer, he passed away because he opened up fentanyl patches and was shooting them. That's something new to me. I mean, I have used those in my own personal medical, treatments. And I guess at that point, I never would have thought of anything like that. And I'm just curious about this new kind of drugs, such as the fentanyl patches, that these kids are, how in the world are they coming up with these things is beyond me. I'm sure it's, going to treatment and hearing other stories, because I was in treatment myself. And that's where I learned a lot of tricks of the trade. But, you know, I'm really scared for these young kids, and I'm not afraid to tell anybody about my past, and if it's going to help someone save their life.
Well, thanks for sharing, Amy. I really appreciate it. And with that, I'm going to go to Jeff Willem. Willems, I've never heard of fentanyl patches, and are you familiar with what Amy's talking about?
Yes, absolutely. We've seen it probably two or three times in the last year or two that I can recall.
And what is that? Is it, it's a pain-killing patch then?
Yeah, it's an extended-release pain-killing patch that's designed to, you put it on an area of the body and it slowly releases the medicine throughout a couple of weeks or a certain time frame. And what people will do is they'll remove the medicine from the inside of the patch, or they'll put it in their mouth and they'll chew it to break it away. And they'll get all of that medicine designed to go into your system in a 1 or 2 week time span.
Get it all
in
at once.
Seconds.
This is so interesting to me. Amber Hahn, you'd like to chime in?
Yeah, actually, Amy brought up a couple of really interesting things. The fentanyl patch is definitely another way that we're seeing narcotic abuse, and I've definitely seen it throughout the county, not just in cases from Hudson. And Jeff's absolutely right. People will chew it, people will shoot it, and I think I've even heard of cases where they smoke it. And another thing I think Amy was really brought up is something that a lot of people don't like to talk about, is Amy talked about learning the tricks of the trade and treatment. And you do in some ways. Treatment is very helpful in so many ways and is definitely should be encouraged. But one of the downsides can be, learning new ways to get around your pain or to deal with substance abuse. And I think that people do learn about different things like fentanyl patches in that way. So it is interesting how it sort of progresses. And fentanyl patches is definitely something we're seeing. I think that still, though, fentanyl patches tend to be harder to get a hold of than heroin. It's still sort of in that group with prescription drugs, and you still have to jump through hoops, you know, to get the patches. And I think that the doctors are sensitive to abuse on fentanyl, so I still think that while that's definitely there, that heroin still tends to be the preferred choice because it's cheaper and easier to obtain.
We're going to take our first break here on the West Side. We're talking about heroin in Hudson and the state lawmakers' recent response. There's been a number of bills introduced aimed at keeping people from overdosing, and also making it a little tougher to get your hands illegally on prescription painkillers. I'm joined by State Representative Dean Knutson, Karen Hale, an anti-heroin advocate from Hudson who lost her daughter to overdose last year, Amber Hahn, Assistant District Attorney for St. Croix County, who works with the County Drug Court, and Jeff Willems, Detective Sergeant with the Hudson Police Department. The number to call in is 1-800-228-5615. We've still got a lot of time to take your calls and questions. The number is 1-800-228-5615. This is The West Side. I'm Rich Kramer, and you're listening to The West Side on Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks for tuning us in this morning. We're revisiting a program that we did last summer, and that program was centered on heroin use, abuse, and overdose deaths in the city of Hudson, right on the border with Minnesota. It's a startling drug that's becoming more popular in Wisconsin, not just in the big cities, but in smaller communities around the state. The number to call in is 1-800-228-5615. We're joined by a number of guests that have dealt with this issue directly. We are joined by Karen Hale, a mother who had lost her daughter last summer to heroin overdose in Hudson. She's been working as an advocate, raising awareness in the meantime since then to get more people understanding of what is actually happening in their communities. Also joining us is Amber Hahn. She's an assistant district attorney who prosecutes drug cases and also is working with the county drug court. We've got Jeff Willems, Detective Sergeant with the Hudson Police Department, and State Representative Dean Knutson of Hudson. The number to call in, 1-800-228-5615. You can also leave a message on our Facebook page. Now, Karen, last summer we were talking on the show about a community forum that you were part of, Heroin in Hudson. And how successful was that? How many people did you were you able to pack into the, during this community
it
foundation?
It was at the First Presbyterian Church. There was about 454 people is what they had mentioned. It was very well received and a great turnout to get out the message.
And since then, have there been any other forums like this? I mean, what has been going on to keep this on people's radar?
Well, Meg Heaton from the Hudson Observer, she has done some articles out in the paper.
Mm-hmm.
There hasn't been another heroin forum, per se. New Richmond is looking at putting one on.
Mm.
I've gone out in the community and ninth graders at Somerset High School and talked to them. I've been an advocate, part of the Restorative Justice under Chris Miner out of River Falls, mm-hmm. who's also tied with drug courts and stuff. And that's a real powerful program. And really talking to addicts, some of my daughter's friends mm-hmm. have been very honest and open. So it's helping educate me that dark side of the life of my daughter that I didn't know of or was kept secret from. So that's the education that I'm learning really from kids out here that are either in treatment, are being successful in their sobriety, some that have relapsed, and some that are still struggling out there.
And as far as numbers, what are the latest numbers, I guess, on overdose deaths within Hudson and maybe in St. Croix County as of, say, right now? Jeff Willems, have you got any numbers? I've heard 7, I've heard 8, I've heard 12.
Yeah, right now, we'll just say countywide.
Okay.
For St. Croix County. In the last 3 to 4 years, I think the number stands at 12.
12. And that, you know, countywide, that, if you look at the broad picture, that might not be a big number. Why should people care?
About the number?
Yeah, the 12 out of so many thousands or whatever.
The total number, is, to me, isn't what's alarming. It's because 3 or 4 years ago, we didn't hear about heroin. We didn't see heroin. Heroin wasn't perceived to be an issue in our area. Our issues were focused on the party drugs, the methamphetamines, the cocaines, the marijuanas, the ecstasies. So when heroin came on the scene, it kind of slapped us all in the face in a big way, and we weren't prepared for it at all.
Hmm. Meaning you didn't have the training for it, or?
Well, we had the training for it, but we weren't. It's a completely different underground lifestyle as what the methamphetamine addicts or cocaine addicts or crack cocaine or marijuana users go through. It's different. And me being naive personally to it, I was like much like you. I thought that heroin addicts were junkies in big cities and living in the alleys and picking out of dumpsters to get through their day. Well, when this happened in St. Croix County, it really was a rude awakening to us that this is a lot closer home, a lot closer to home than what we all thought. So it's not the sheer number of 12 deaths in 3 to 4 years. What's more alarming to me is the 7 deaths in the last 2 years, because to me that tells me that the problem is escalating.
And is, you know, Hudson and that part of St. Croix County is fairly affluent. I mean, there's a lot of jobs, there's a lot of wealth, for lack of better terms. Is this becoming like a rich kid drug at all? Or is that just too oversimplifying it, Karen Hill?
You know, I don't think money has anything to do with it. I really think it's the choice of what a child is going to make or a person's going to make. You know, it has no discriminatory factor. because there's inner city kids that are using it. There's kids from, you know, all demographics. So is money a factor? Probably easier available because we may have better toys or things that they can pawn and steal from us to make it easier for them. But I don't think the discrimination is money factor only.
And that's another thing I'd like to bring up, and maybe it's for Jeff, but I'm going to go to Amber first. These drug cases, property crime seems to be a big part of it. And have you seen that increase in the Hudson area and St. Croix County area? And I'm not sure if you prosecute that type of crime directly, but
I primarily focus on drug felony cases. However, so I don't primarily deal directly with a lot of the property crime. However, we're a fairly small office, and you know, we obviously talk to each other about what types of cases we're seeing. And I work pretty closely with law enforcement, so I hear their side of things. Property crime is constant. Every drug addict usually dabbles in property crime at some time or another. It's how they feed their habit, and it's how they get their drugs. And so property crime is definitely a constant. I wouldn't say that heroin addicts are any more or less likely than any other type of addict to commit property crime, but they go hand in hand. You don't have one without the other. That's definitely true.
And so Karen mentioned that we had this public forum last year in Hudson, standing room only, had a good reception. Dean Knutson, tonight there's a listening session at the Hudson High School at the high school auditorium at 7 p.m. What are we going to be talking about there?
Well, we want to hear from the community, particularly what they think about these bills.
Mm-hmm.
And I have invited Representative Nygren, will be driving over from Marinette, and you know, he's the author of the bills. He went through this personally, just like, you know, the terrible tragedy many families have suffered, and he was called to the scene where his daughter had overdosed and managed to save her life, but she's still struggling with the whole addiction. He knows this firsthand. He's worked on it. I think you heard from Karen talking about the stigma and how hard it is for families to come forward. I think he deserves a lot of credit because he's in a position to both know that something needs to be done, but also to suffer that kind of desire to keep the problem private. And yet he came forward with some recommendations, and I think they're good ones.
So let's talk about these bills. First of all, we've got Assembly Bill 446, and it has to do with a drug called Naloxone. Is that another name for Narcan? And I guess more overall, what is this bill designed to do?
So Narcan is a reversal agent, and when given, it will counteract or reverse many of the effects of the heroin. And so given in a timely manner, it can be life-saving. So at the time that, you know, when the overdose victim gets to the ER, they're going to get Narcan. What we'd like to do is more often have that Narcan actually with the paramedics, the EMTs, the first responders, or maybe even others. You know, a police officer maybe would have training and have it in their car so that they could administer it quickly, and because timeliness is so essential here. And because Narcan itself is a controlled substance, there have been a lot of barriers to that happening, and so this law is designed to put it in the hands of people that can administer it on a timely basis. We're going to save lives with that.
And I've seen some videos and some documentary-type footage about what this, you know, it seems like it snaps people right out of it. It's almost like magic. What cities or what areas already have Narcan in ambulances, for example? I would guess Milwaukee and Madison.
Well, it's not a matter of funding or something like that. It's because it has to be administered on the prescription of a physician currently, so that's a difficult thing for them to have it there. So there may be advanced life support kind of situations where it can be done on the scene, but a lot of places it just can't. So I honestly don't know the specific communities that currently could do this, but we need to have more Narcan in the hands of more first responders.
Now, Karen Hale, I'm wondering, you know, what are your thoughts on this bill, and do you think that how big of a deal would this be to get all first responders in the state, Narcan.
I think this is a phenomenal bill. It sent a strong message that an addict's life is worth saving. It seconds count on an overdose. And just even transporting an overdose victim from the scene to a hospital could be a matter of that life or death for that victim. You know, it also sends a strong message that an addict's life is worth saving and worth giving a second chance.
Jeff Willems, any thoughts on Narcan? I mean, have you been involved with any training and having to do with it? And what are the thoughts of, you know, maybe having law enforcement officers perhaps carrying it in their car?
I don't know about that per se with law enforcement. Absolutely, EMTs and first responders for sure. Law enforcement, I would have to think about that for a little bit. I think it's a great bill. I've seen the disheartening thing for me is that several of the overdose death cases that I've investigated, they had the victims had a kit with Narcan or Naloxone in their kit with their heroin. So it only works if there's someone else there to supply the Naloxone.
Hmm. And what are your reservations about officers or firefighters having it with them?
I don't have any reservation to firefighter. Most firefighters are trained EMTs,
sure, okay,
or paramedics. And law enforcement officers are trained as first responders. We don't have the emergency medical technician certifications. We don't have that sort of training. I'm not saying that law enforcement wouldn't be receptive to that kind of training, but it would be a larger training curve,
sure,
than with current EMTs or first responders.
Amber Hunt?
One other thing I would just add to that is I can't speak for every case, but I think in a lot of cases, EMTs are arriving simultaneously with the police, or at least in very close proximity to when police are arriving. Because if you're thinking about how these calls are going out, they're often going out to police and EMTs simultaneously. So in a lot of our smaller communities like we have in St. Croix County, we are very lucky to have very good response teams. And a lot of times they're arriving very close in time. And so if you have a situation where you have a law enforcement officer and an EMT, and in an ideal world, they're both trained to use it. But in a less ideal world, at least if those EMTs have it and they're trained to use it, then you know, that's going to be a good situation.
We're talking about heroin in Hudson and heroin use, which is growing statewide in Wisconsin. Specifically right now, we're talking about four bills that have been introduced to stem the tide of overdose deaths and also to make it harder for people to get their hands on illegally, fraudulently at least, prescription drugs that can kind of open the door to heroin addiction. The number to call in is 1-800-228-5615. We've got wide open phone lines, and we can take your call, 1-800-228-5615. Dean Knutson, there's another bill that's very interesting to me. This is Assembly Bill 447, another one introduced, I believe, by Representative Nygren. And it has to do with granting immunity where people might have faced prosecution before. Am I getting that right, or am I oversimplifying?
So too often what happens is there's a number of individuals together, someone shooting up, there's an overdose. The friends realize that the person's in trouble, but they also realize that they're going to be subject to prosecution and sort of their whole secret's going to come crashing down if they get involved. And so oftentimes they may make a phone call, but then they'll leave. And so instead of rendering aid or maybe taking the person somewhere, unfortunately they've got an incentive not to do what you'd think they would want to do. Mm-hmm. What we're trying to do here is it's limited immunity from certain prosecutions, like for possession, to try to help that people would render aid.
Now, I want to go straight to law enforcement with this one. I'm wondering, I'm not sure if there's been any kind of controversy surrounding this, but would law enforcement have an issue with the immunity? And what are your personal thoughts on this bill, Jeff Willems?
I think it's a good bill. I don't personally have any reservations with this bill. These bills are directed at saving lives, and that's kind of what law enforcement is all about as well.
Right.
And public safety, from a public safety perspective. So I don't have any reservations with that bill. I'd rather have someone be honest and open with me to talk to me and tell me the story, as opposed to have to try to track these people down and then have them be reluctant to talk to me. And it helps the investigation in the long run.
Hmm. Amber Hahn, I'm curious to get your thoughts since you prosecute some of these cases. Could this possibly hinder your job?
I don't think we'll know the answer to that until it's enacted, but I think overall it has more positive aspects than negative aspects. And as Detective Willem said, you know, we can tell all kinds of horror stories. People who have moved the bodies of the deceased, have gotten rid of the deceased belongings, have done things to try to hide what actually happened to that person, and in the end, hindering the subsequent investigation. And if this bill is the answer, I don't know, or if it's something else in addition to that, but if we can somehow get across to the community of addicts that we need them to talk to us, we need them to call for help right away, and that bad things aren't going to happen to them, you know, from doing that, and restore that instinct to help their friend instead of and get them through that initial fear, then I think that overall we're going to save lives and improve investigations. You know, whether this bill is the only step or just a beginning, you know, that I'm not really sure on.
And Karen Hale, I don't want to get too deep into the details of your situation, your daughter's situation, but from what you've learned over the past year or so, would this immunity have helped Alyssa Ivy, your daughter, or other people that, you know, whose stories you've heard?
Absolutely. I think, you know, if my daughter was possibly having a heart attack, had repercussion off of an allergic reaction to something, immediate 911 call would have probably gone out. Unfortunately, my recollection is it did not. And, you know, again, not necessarily just hovering in on her case, but it gives the addicts, and if they're together using, they're hiding evidence, they're making other calls out to other people, it's not saving the person's life. And I think that is the scared portion that comes into play. And just like both Detective Willem and Amber had mentioned, the person that could potentially make that call or pick up that phone is scared. And that's the bottom line. They're afraid that they're going to get in trouble without really thinking in a cognizant mind of that they could potentially be saving a life.
You know, I don't know the details, Representative Knutson, but say if a person, you know, they're granted immunity, but I imagine if there are any drugs involved, those would be confiscated. Are you aware of that kind of detail in this bill?
I'm sure they would.
I would guess, too.
I think so.
Okay. Amber Hunt?
Just on that issue, law enforcement has an obligation to seize any contraband or illegal substance. So Whether there's a subsequent prosecution or not, those drugs are still going to be taken into evidence and destroyed pursuant to policy.
Makes sense. Now, the other couple of bills introduced, have to do with kind of making it tougher to get your hands on prescription drugs. EB 445 requires photo ID and signature of people who are prescribed a narcotic painkiller. Well, we've already got the prescription drug monitoring program, which you were in the legislature, Dean Knutson, when that passed, I believe. What does this next step accomplish that PDMP doesn't?
Because you don't have to show ID right now. So unfortunately, there are people that have trafficked in illegal or forged prescriptions. This is partly what happened up in Marinette. There was actually a physician, you know, who had issued hundreds, probably thousands of prescriptions for OxyContin. And as a result, they had a community with lots of OxyContin addicts. When that physician finally was prosecuted and wasn't doing that anymore, all of a sudden you had all these people that couldn't get OxyContin, and guess what? The heroin suppliers from Chicago figured that out pretty quickly, and then you had a lot of heroin addicts. So, you know, very few physicians do that, but there are times when someone, you know, gets a hold of grandma's prescription and is somehow getting the pills without their knowledge. We don't want that.
I remember talking to the sheriff for Marinette County. I believe his name is Jerry Solvey, but he told me that it seemed like the next day after that doctor went to prison, the next day heroin was showing up, and that's just amazing to me. Amber Hunt, any thoughts on this bill requiring, you know, we're tracking who gets prescriptions, at least through a system that the state has. How big of a difference do you think a signature and a photo ID will make on top of that?
How much it'll deter people from committing fraud, I don't know. I would think that it's certainly going to have some deterrence effect because there's that extra step. There's that extra set of accountability of showing your ID and knowing that you're being documented for picking up that substance. On a prosecution side of things, it's very helpful in investigations. It's another piece to combat the doctor shoppers and the people that are getting multiple prescriptions and either selling them or using them themselves in an unsafe way, is to have that ID. That's going to help investigations and prosecutions immensely.
It's just amazing. So many of these drugs over the counter, you know, you've got to sign your name for things like, you know, to get allergy medications with the pseudoephedrine in it. And it's just amazing that these drugs that used to be prescribed and not prescribed and just kind of free reign, it has to be locked down because of these awful problems. Dean Knutson, there's one more bill, Assembly Bill 448, and this has to do with something we were talking about already, and it has to do with drug disposal and drug drop-offs. So what's the aim here?
Making it easier for local governments to run an effective drop-off program, something that really works and that it can be more cost-effective. And then just because, you know, think about it, so you have to have things under control because now people are turning over their leftover OxyContin and so on to you. And so we want to make sure that that is in the right hands and then is destroyed. But the previous rules made it very, very difficult. When we first started looking into this to do it in Hudson about 5 years ago or so, it's not just about, you know, devising a strong lockbox. It's also, you know, chain of custody and where is it going to go, how is it going to get from the police department to the disposal agency and so on. There have been a number of hurdles. We need to make this easier because this is really important. This is an important gateway step that those leftover prescriptions can be an experimentation, and the next thing you know, you're buying those from a pusher. And then when you can't afford that, the dealer says, well, instead of $50, I've got this alternative for $15, and down the road you go. And so it really is important.
And Jeff Willems, we've got a lot of nodding heads here in the studio. And what are you aware of the things that would get in the way of your police department setting up a drop box? I mean, what is that chain of command, and what are the issues here?
Yeah, there were several hurdles, just like Representative Knutson had stated, when we were trying to get that program up and running. And I think we've been fairly successful. We haven't, it's not where it needs to be, obviously, but at our police department, at the St. Croix County Sheriff's Department, and I think there's a couple other communities within St. Croix County that are operating programs like this. But some of the hurdles that Representative Knutson talked about were very real, and they are still. It's very time consuming, and it's a very tedious process to track this information and to track these pills and to get them to the disposal site pursuant to all the state statutes.
And do you have any ideas how many pounds of pills that you've been able to collect with this drop box? I mean, I know locally Eau Claire's got one, Chippewa County's got one, and they talk about, you know, pounds and thousands of pounds of them over the year. Any numbers by chance?
I don't have any raw data on that, but I know that there have been, I would say, several hundreds of pounds.
We're talking about heroin in Hudson, and heroin across the state. It's a growing issue that a lot of folks are getting into. There seems to be a connection, a strong connection, that is, with prescription painkillers and heroin. And now the state is introducing some bills to combat overdose deaths. If you want to join in the conversation, the number is 1-800-228-5615. We've still got enough time to take one or two more calls. The number again, 1-800-228-5615. We're joined by Karen Hale, Amber Hahn, and Jeff Williams, along with State Representative Jeff Willems, along with State Representative Dean Knutson. We'll have more when we return. This is The West Side. I'm Rich Kramer, and you're listening to The West Side on Wisconsin Public Radio. We're talking about heroin in Hudson and state lawmakers' response. There have been a number of bills introduced to make it tougher for people to fraudulently get their hands on prescription painkillers, which are kind of a gateway drug to heroin. And also, there are a couple of bills introduced to aimed at slowing down the trend of heroin overdose deaths. And we're joined by Dean Knutson. He's a state representative from Hudson. We've also got Karen Hale, who lost her daughter to overdose last year. She's been working to raise awareness in the Hudson community about this issue. Amber Hahn is an assistant district attorney in St. Croix County who works with the drug court there, and we're going to talk about that right now. And we've got Jeff Willems. He's a detective sergeant with the Hudson Police Department who has worked a number of drug cases. The number to call in with a question or comment, or if you'd like to share a story, you can do that, is 1-800-228-5615. The number's, again, 1-800-228-5615. We've still got about 7 minutes, and that's plenty of time to take one more call. We'd love to hear from you, folks. Now, the St. Croix County Drug Court, what role does this do they play in all this? And when people go to the drug court, they're already past prosecution. Is that correct?
Correct. The drug court can definitely be of help to heroin addicts, just as it is to addicts of many other substances. The drug court tries to combine supervision, consistent testing to keep the addicts accountable and keep them sober. We combine that with treatment, intensive treatment, making sure they have access not only to drug and alcohol treatment, but also access to mental health treatment, access to counseling services, therapists to deal with issues that may have brought about their addictions, may have brought about their drug use. And then we also combine that with a support system. The whole team is there to support the person, to let them know that they care about them, that they have worth, and that they, you know, that they can get a job, they can live in the community, and they can beat this. And we try to combine all those elements to get people through their addictions and get them back to being contributing members of society. And drug treatment courts definitely have success with that. I would say that we're, as the heroin problem has just sort of exploded recently, that it has reached the drug court, but the majority of it hasn't quite gotten there yet.
Okay.
And that, again, has to do with the number of cases that we actually get to prosecution because of the nature of how heroin is used. But it's coming.
And Karen Hale, as far as treatment is concerned, I remember when you were – I interviewed you for a story that we did with Wisconsin Public Radio last summer, and it was not long after your daughter had passed, and you had mentioned – something about treatment. You had told me that if you would have driven Alyssa across the Minnesota border and told her she was now homeless, she would have had better options for treatment. What did you mean by that? And do you still stand by that statement?
Well, you know, I haven't really seen a lot of change within our area in regards to the treatment within the St. Croix.
Why was it hard to come by?
You know, it's, again, this is a stigma. I mean, who do you call? Who do you, you know, because you're trying to expose and you're trying to find help and hope for your child. And where do you open this can of worms up, right? Because you've hit in such an isolated environment because of having an addict child. I had heard and have since learned, and I know a lot of families that are doing this. Minnesota has Rule 25. That kicks into place. You have to be a resident of the state, and help is available. Because sometimes you don't have insurance for your child, or the child is over age where they can't be on your insurance anymore. So those hindrances are there for the parent. I know those practices are still in place. I do know some parents that still have apartments in Minnesota. I still know people that are using the Rule 25 over there in order to get treatment, halfway houses, aftercare.
Because the in-person treatment is very expensive, is it not?
Absolutely, absolutely. You know, and it's a revolving door. I mean, if you talk to any addict, majority of addicts have been in and out of treatment. Something hasn't stuck with them either, because again, it's a want. As a parent, you want that so desperately for your child. It's until your child or the person that you're trying to help takes that initiative and really grasps that they need that help.
Now, Dean Knutson, I remember speaking with Dave Spakowitz. He's with the Department of Criminal Investigation, kind of a top voice in law enforcement on heroin and opiate painkillers. He mentioned that the state needs more methadone clinics and more treatment options. Are there any bills in the works to get more treatment options available to people who are struggling with this kind of addiction?
Well, there are, but we need to do more. I mean, in the last budget, our treatment and diversion funding was doubled, but there's a growing consensus that what we're doing isn't nearly enough there. I think in the next budget we'll be expecting to see more funding there. We helped with more funding for counties that don't have a drug court, so we did put money in for grants to help those counties get going with the drug court. The basic problem of treatment is it's very expensive, and it can be multiple times. It's a difficult thing. We're in an era when all our health care plans are changing or have recently changed, and so that has some impact on this. But Karen is right that Minnesota has had a different kind of a plan where there's state funding that flows through to the county level in a way that we don't do it that way in Wisconsin.
All right. With that, I wish we had more time to discuss this issue, but with that, that's our time. A reminder, there's a listening session on these bills tonight in the Hudson High School Auditorium. It begins at 7 p.m. Public is welcome, and you're able to testify on the bills what you think. Thanks to my guests, Jeff Williams is a detective sergeant with the Hudson Police Department. Amber Hahn is an assistant district attorney for St. Croix County who works with the county drug court. Karen Hale is a mother who lost her daughter to heroin last year and is now working to raise awareness about this drug and its impact. And Dean Knutson is a Republican state representative from Hudson. Thank you all. I'd also like to thank Henry Lippold for producing the program, Mort Cypress for on-air production, Tiffany Coggins for promotions, and Dean Collenbeck for keeping our ducks in a row. Tune in next week. We're going to be talking about the legacy of Martin Luther King Jr. on the West Side. Have a good week.